The following program is created for informational purposes only and does not constitute as medical advice. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the host. If you think you may have a medical emergency, consult your doctor.
This is where the healing begins.
This is Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne of Greenwood Family Chiropractic, where it's not only about neck and back pain, but a place for whole body wellness. Listen this hour as Dr. Leanne is here to share her wellness education to help you live a maximized life. For more information, visit GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com. Here's Dr. Leanne.
Good morning. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter with Greenwood Family Chiropractic. 317-893-2853. 317-893-2853. GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today, we are talking about milk. It's been one that I have talked about milk throughout different shows, but it has been years upon years since we've talked about evolving and changing thought processes on milks, the different types, what to look for, why cow's milk versus, you know, a nut milk like almond milk or coconut milk. But then really just digging down into how to make the best choice for you and your family. So I'm excited to update this a little bit because, you know, the know better, do better, and grow. And, you know, it's been very different thought processes and why over the last 10 years and kind of all this has come out. So before we dive down deep into talking about milk, let's talk about some news.
Dr. Leanne's Health News.
Some studies suggest that too much sugar can literally mess with the brain.
Health News Now, one of the world's most commonly prescribed medications.
Today, the average American consumes 22 teaspoons of sugar a day.
Protesters say they just should not be forced to get this shot, not by the government.
For today's Health in the News, fluoride exposure linked to detrimental effects on health of pregnant women and infants. So the mineral has been linked to effects on bone strength, thyroid function, and cognitive development. Though, that being said, fluoride has been used for dental health tools as means for preventing cavities, fighting tooth decay. But now, a meta-analysis suggests that it could have, quote, detrimental effects on the health of pregnant women and infants, which I feel like says a lot because especially with kids, you're like, nope, they need fluoride. You need to have fluoride. So researchers analyzed throughout the study and concluded that exposure to fluoride, quote, offers little benefit to the fetus and young infants. Systemic fluoride exposure can have a harmful impact on bone strength, thyroid function, and cognitive developments, according to the findings, which were published in the Annual Review of Public Health. So community-wide administration of systemic fluoride may pose an unfavorable risk benefit ratio for pregnant women, fetus, and infants, according to the meta-analysis. Felipe, who is a researcher on the study and professor of environmental medicine at the University of Southern Denmark, stated, quote, fluoride is toxic to early brain development. It is not dependent on the source of fluoride. In addition to fluoridated drinking water, we need to limit ingestion of fluoridated toothpaste, which by itself is great, is detrimental if you swallow it. He recommended avoiding consumption of certain types of black teas, especially those that are grown in fluoride-rich soils, which, for example, would be East Africa and certain parts of China and India. Obviously, the CDC states that fluoride strengthens teeth and reduces cavities by placing minerals lost during normal wear and tear. The review noted that with growing access to fluoride over the years, fluoride's beneficial effects are typically topical, citing that there's no need for widespread community fluoridation. In other words, the more fluoride you get, because the problem is that exposure to fluoride is dose related. So in other words, the more fluoride you get, the lower your IQ is going to be. The benefits of fluoride are topical. So it was originally thought that when we put it in the water back in the 1940s, that there were systemic benefits. In other words, if you drank it, it would do something to your body to prevent the growth of cavities or support the bones, but that's just not how it works. They actually found that with higher doses, you see extreme loss of bone density. So more than 200 million Americans, about 75% of our population in the United States, currently drinks fluoridated water, so water that has fluoride in it. The entire benefit of it comes from topical application. Topical is like if you use it not inside, so topically, if that makes sense. There's really no reason to have it in the water supply in this era where we have toothpaste and mouthwashes. So Kennedy says that he plans to tell the CDC to stop recommending fluoride to drinking water. Utah actually recently became the first state to pass legislation banning fluoride in public drinking water. Lawmakers in other states, including Ohio, South California, and Florida, also have submitted proposals to restrict local governments or water system operators from adding fluoride to water. So I think it's really interesting because you're like, I want to do fluoride. And you're like, that's great. You still can. It's just not necessarily going to be in your water. I don't think what people realize is that fluoride can induce thyroid dysfunction. It increases lead concentration in whole blood, causes dental fluorosis, which is where if you ever notice like really brown stains, that's from over fluoridation because it's too much for too long of a time, or it's too much and becomes neurotoxicity, especially in utero and early childhood. So I think so often when we think it's just the best thing ever. But get real. If you think that your kids don't swallow toothpaste, you either don't have kids or you live under a rock because that's all they typically do. And so I think it's just one where you can try to use it topically. And we've talked about fluoride before and its effect on brain and neurotoxicity. But what I think is really interesting is that so much higher comes from teeth cleaning. You know, so we just request that we do fluoride-free treatments when we go to the dentist. We utilize fluoride-free. We utilize more of hydroxyapatite concentrate for teeth remineralization, as well as like xylitol is really great for that. So that's kind of what we use as a family more so. As adults and kids, we have slightly different ones only because the mint is spicy. According to my small children. So they have a little bit different when it comes to their toothpaste, but we actively don't do that. And so far, you know, they all have teeth and we're doing good so far. And I just think it's one of those ones where when you're consuming these massive, massive amounts, we don't necessarily go through what the other side effects are. We just think fluoride for strong teeth. And you might say from a topical standpoint, maybe, but the more that you get and the more, you know, fluoridated water for babies. I remember seeing like the gallon of fluoride water and it's got, you know, the baby bottle and the ABC square blocks, like the wooden blocks, because they're like, this is for kids. And you're like, oh, goodness gracious. You know, if you only knew what that was doing to their brain, because if it's affecting your IQ, it's affecting your brain. So I think those are ones where if you're one who is, you know, really avid that you want fluoride, then you can go get some fluoride other places. But, you know, lots of people spend lots of money actively taking out a lot of those additives. I want clean water, which means I don't want anything in my water. And that includes minerals. I can get minerals through food and other different sources. I want my water to be nice and clean. So I think it's very chlorine, fluoride, you know, just a lot of that junk in there. But we're on the movement to getting it out. Pregnant women, fetuses and infants feel it more because you're seeing cellular growth exponentially faster. So you can see more of a tangible, visible, unfortunate effect on the brain and its development. So fluoride free is the way to go. But all that to say, what about milk? And we'll talk more next.
You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. Videos, tips, deals, and more. Find Greenwood Family Chiropractic on Instagram. Here's Dr. Leanne.
Welcome back. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today, we are talking about milk. Now, it's been interesting because you kind of see how some of the thought processes change. So when I opened up practice, you know, over a decade ago, it was very much the start of all the rage of nut milks. Now, or like milk, non-dairy milk alternatives, I think is what they call them now. Because you can have oat milk, you can have soy milk, you can have almond milk, coconut milk, hemp milk, right? Like there's so many of them. I was telling my radio producer, it was so funny because I had seen this meme a couple years back, maybe not even a couple years, but it was like a guy standing in front of God, and he was like, "What are you drinking?" And he goes, like some sort of non-dairy milk alternative. And God was like, "I gave you all of these animals and you go and get milk from an almond." Like, I'm probably not doing it justice, but I thought it was really funny. And I've thought about it a lot over the last several years. So I think it's just one where you're like, "Welp, yeah, absolutely." Now, that being said, I think milk in general has changed a little bit and non-dairy milk alternatives have changed a little bit. It's a little bit of a history on milk. I thought it was really interesting when we kind of go back and like, what made milk so big? So historians actually date the practice of drinking cow's milk back to the past 8 to 10,000 years. Kind of a short, brief history. The history of milk is somewhat short, but kind of riveting. And a lot of it has to do with like the government in power and corruption. And so skim milk, I think, really got popular. So prior to the 1930s, most all skim milk was just sent down river. So you have to think, if you ever look at how you make butter, you take like butter milk and you just churn it and churn it and churn it until the butter clumps together. And then you have this like thin skimmed milk, and they used to just get rid of it. Families who drank milk typically had one option. That was whole milk. It was what, you know, it was fresh. It was non-pasteurized. It came right from the cow. It was whole milk. It was all of it. And skim milk really just existed as a byproduct of butter making. And so this waste, they considered it waste at the time, was just disposed of by dumping it into rivers until it was forced to put a stop to it due to the horrific odor of spoiled milk that permeated the surrounding areas. So it was about the 1950s that they made skim milk got some more commercial attention. So they thought it was, they're like, hey, we could just dry it, powder it, and then just add water, and then you'd have this mix, right? So think about like baby formula, very much so. So the industry had plenty of skim milk to get rid of. So much of it was left over from World War II when dried milk powder was used as a relief food. So to chisel down the surplus, the industry employed skilled marketers to position skim milk as a weight loss food. So milk dealers received backings from physicians who helped promote this as like a health food. And so by the 1950s, skim milk has transformed from a waste byproduct to a trendy weight loss beverage. Now, back in World War II, they also had, that's what kind of catapulted America's century-long milk surplus into existence. So the U.S. government started sending canned and powdered milk to soldiers overseas, and dairy farmers responded by ramping up production. So they invested in like the latest equipment. And now, while the war ended, the milk production did not. So it created a surplus and very, very low milk prices. So throughout the 1930s, dairy farmers staged strikes and unionized demands for fair prices for their milk. So to appease the farmers, the government created federal programs to artificially drive up demand. And so this is where you see in the 1940s federal milk program for schools. You'll see in 1946, President Truman passed the National School Lunch Act, which mandated each lunch included between 1.5 to 2 pints of whole milk. So in essence, since adults weren't buying milk, the government was just like, hey, we can put it into school lunch. Which can offer free or low-cost lunches to students of low-income families, and they're required to take a carton of milk daily. And so, you know, they went through all of that. So then in 1982, a New York Times reporter stated that federal government would spend $40 to $50 million transporting surplus of dairy. Because they're like, hey, we've got to figure out. In 1977, Jimmy Carter allowed $2 billion of federal money to be funneled into the dairy industry over the course of 4 years. And so that's where you see a lot of the more modern marketing. Like, you guys remember Got Milk, like a huge pro-dairy. So all of this, I kind of tell you all of this is because when we see milk and you're like, why do you need milk? And we've always been taught like milk makes strong bones. And in reality, it's one of the most argued foods in history when we talk about milk and how it was. But I think it says it's still only something like 40% of the human population that drinks milk past the age of 2. So I thought that was kind of interesting. We as the United States have the highest consumption of milk, but yet we have the highest risk of osteoporosis. So that Got Milk campaign back in the 80s into the 90s, you know, they took the best athletes and then the, you know, most popular people at the time, and they've got this Got Milk campaign. It's like strong bones, got milk. And so that's driven into our minds, which I think is just so interesting. In that, you know, as an adult now, who we don't really consume a lot of milk at our house, and I'll tell you kind of the milk that we do and why, is that we've always just been taught it creates strong bones, and in reality, it really doesn't. Now we fast forward to a lot of the pesticides and herbicides that we spray food with. Now the cows eat, and they're finding antibiotics in the milk, and they're finding these pesticides and herbicides in the milk. And I'm like, I don't really want to do that. You know, so in the early 2010s, that's where I'm like, I'm going to start doing some more non-dairy based milk. And I did. And now at that point in time, it really was one where it was like, hey, here's how you make it. And there was only maybe one or two different types because it was very new. And we said, hey, now fast forward, we're like, but now what are in nut milks? And you're like, well, that nut milk can stay on your counter for, you know, or your pantry for 2 years. It's shelf stable. And you're like, why is it so shelf stable? And the answer is preservatives, emulsifiers. You know, you think how you would make almond milk, for example, is you would let almonds sit and soak overnight to soften them. Pour out that water and then pour almonds and water in a blender, new clean water in a blender. Mix it up. You could add in vanilla extract. You could add in your own sweetener. And then all of a sudden, oh gosh, and then you've got sweetened milk. Gosh, I even forgot about that. You've got all this sweetened milk now and you're like, oh my gosh, I love sweetened almond milk. And you're like, that's like drinking a half a soda with your almond milk because it's got so much sugar in it. And you're like, oh, you took a good, what could be a good thing, and you made it not so good. And so then you've got all of these carrageenan, and there's all these health implications for that. And so I think it just took something that could be really good and had such potential, but over the course of time, for lack of better terminology, like there's just this bastardization that came to it because we have to create it, these high volumes, and then, you know, people don't like the unsweetened ones. We add sugar to it, and you're like, I'm having almond milk in my coffee, and you're like, that's just as bad as a standard creamer, right? You're better off actually putting, and that's kind of how I got to where I started changing my viewpoint a little bit. I was like, okay, I'm going to do almond milk creamer, and then I looked at it, I'm like, it's got so many ingredients, it's got so much sugar. I'm like, that's really no better than the, you know, Girl Scout cookie creamer that has all the hydrogenated oils. And, you know, it was just like, oh my gosh, Oatly milk. I remember taking a picture of that in the store a couple years ago and looking at the ingredients. It was oat milk. Because I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do regular milk. I'm going to do oat milk. And something inside me, I'm like, gosh, the marketing is beautiful on this container. And I was like, I'm gonna look at the ingredients. And there was rapeseed oil, which is canola oil, which is a highly genetically modified rancid oil, you know. And we've got all these people who have high cholesterol and, you know, fatty liver disease, and we're consuming rancid oil in our oat milk. And you're like, is that truly better? And so that was kind of the turning point that I picked my head up and said, you know what, I think I'm gonna start looking into milk a little bit more. And that, because I could very much make my own almond milk, I know how, but it really only lasts for when you're making it at home for maybe a week. We don't go through that much milk. I started to make a change. So when we come back, there are certain aspects of milk, if you ever heard of A1 or A2, but I'll tell you more of what those are next.
You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. This is Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne of Greenwood Family Chiropractic. Here's Dr. Leanne.
Welcome back. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today we're talking about milk. The goods, the bads, the non-dairy alternatives, all the really great things. Now, again, if you have listened to me before, you might say, I thought she didn't really like milk. And I didn't. And I don't really use it that much. Like this is one when we say, like, what do you do for milk? We now are getting real milk. And by say real milk, I mean cow's milk. There are some specifications that I like to have. And here's kind of why. is that when I was, sometimes I want just like a little splash of milk in my coffee. And a lot of the non-dairy milk alternatives had just a bunch of extra stuff in it. Extra ingredients, extra emulsifiers, stabilizers, sugar, oils. And I just don't want to do that. And so, you know, it didn't have all of that. Regular cow's milk. And so that's kind of where I started to transition that over. When we do use milk, we use it in like relatively small amounts. So like a splash here, a splash there. If I'm doing like almond flour pancakes, I might put a splash of milk in there. If I'm making some, there's a really good, I think it's technically supposed to be dairy-free, but I put like a splat. You just use non-milk, non-dairy alternatives. But here's the thing. A lot of the times I say the average person is really sensitive to milk. And it is not necessarily untrue. There are some people. But what I have found is that a lot of the times people say, well, I'm lactose intolerant. And in reality, they're not really lactose intolerant. They're casein intolerant. So if you ever want to know more information, I'd love if you ever reached out at our office, 317-893-2853. You can shoot emails over if you want to, info@greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com, or shoot us a text, 317-893-2853. Now, one of the things that I look for is A2 milk. You'll see most of the time they're not going to say, this is A1 milk. Because it's like not really the greatest. But when you look at A1 and A2, they're beta casein proteins. Now, this is more specifically when people say, I have a sensitivity to dairy. It's typically the casein that they're more sensitive to, not the lactose. Lactose is milk sugar. Casein is actually the protein. That protein's structure, if you will, that protein structure is somewhat similar to gluten. So it is not uncommon for people to have more of that sensitivity from a GI-related issue. Now, what I have found is that when we look more at A2 milk, A2 milk is specifically produced to contain only A2 proteins. So casein proteins make up about 80% of the total protein in cow's milk, with beta casein being one of the major components. So A1 and A2 proteins differ by just one amino acid. So it's a really small variation structurally, but it has made, it's thought to make a significant difference in digestion. So historically, cows primarily produce A2 beta casein, but a genetic mutation introduced the A1 protein into dairy herds, right? So they're like, hey, here's this one. So some research actually shows that A2 milk may be easier for people to tolerate, particularly ones who experience discomfort after drinking regular milk but are not lactose intolerant. It's kind of hard to know if you are or if you're not. I think the average person's just like, hi, I have dairy, I have an upset belly. So what's interesting about A2 milk is that it's actually been shown to be easier on the digestive system for people who are sensitive to regular cow's milk, but are not lactose intolerant. So they actually looked at in 2019, there was a randomized double-blind crossover study conducted in China on children who drank A2 milk in place of their standard milk that had both A1 and A2 proteins, and they actually reported fewer GI symptoms, gastrointestinal-related symptoms, after just 5 days. They also saw a cognitive benefit after making the switch. So another study published in Journal of Cancer Prevention, participants who drank A2 milk reported fewer digestive symptoms such as bloating compared to those who had regular A1 protein. So less abdominal pain than people who consumed regular milk. So they found reduction in inflammation. You know, I used to say, hey, milk is really inflammatory. And it can be. If you're doing traditional, that is very high in antibiotics, in pesticides and herbicides, because it's not, you know, it's what the cow consumes or is what is given to the cow that is produced in the milk. Just like humans, for example, right? You can't take certain medications while breastfeeding. Why does it, every paperwork that you go in everywhere, are you breastfeeding or pregnant? Why? Because you can do nothing ever if you're pregnant or breastfeeding, because the impact that it has, you're sustaining life on another human, right? So they found, a 2017 study found that participants consuming A2 milk had reduced markers of intestinal inflammation compared to those who drank A1 milk. This benefit individuals with mild inflammatory conditions affecting the gut. So again, A2 milk, potential cognitive benefits. They found it improves cognitive function, particularly in individuals with milk intolerance, reduction in type 1 diabetes. Sub-epidemiological studies found a correlation between A1 milk consumption and increased risk of type 1 diabetes, which obviously they're like, it's still very controversial, and there's a lot of further investigation and studies to be done. So I think it's just really interesting. So one of the things that we have done differently is, because we're still not doing big glasses of milk. Those are ones where people are like, how does your kid get calcium? And you're like, from calcium rich foods. Like, I think the funniest thing is sometimes I'll forget and I'll say, you know, kind of like pretend threaten the kids. And I'll say, well, you know, if you don't, whatever, like, you're gonna have to eat broccoli, you know. And my kids love broccoli. It's like one of their favorite things. They're like, Mom, we like broccoli. And I'm like, like, I forget, you know, you're not like threatening them, you're just like trying to incentivize them or decentivize them for doing something. And I'm like, you're gonna have to eat broccoli. And they're like, we love broccoli. I'm like, that didn't work. So we're not, but kale and broccoli, sardines, like my 6 and 7 year old boy love sardines. Like they will just eat them right out of the can. You know, so just things like that. And you're like, why? Because I eat sardines and they want to eat sardines. Different types of seeds, almonds, they love nuts. So there really is other ways that you can add in calcium rich food that's not obviously just milk. But if we do have it, like we have A2 milk, and you can find this at all your grocery stores. They carry them in bulk at Costco. A2 milk. We typically do whole milk. Reason being is because I do think that there is a higher nutrient value that sticks with whole milk as opposed to skim milk, right? What happens is we heat it, we skim it, we heat it, we skim it. We basically take off all the really good stuff and we're left with this skimmed milk. Well, number one, it has a higher sugar content. It is higher in lactose. Ose is a sugar. And so oftentimes you'll see more of a blood sugar spike with skim milk than you were with whole milk. So we think it's healthier, maybe because it's slightly less caloric. Like there's less calories. It's not as caloric dense. But you also lose all that really, really good fat. I think it's very, very interesting when we go through and we're like, hey, babies, infants need fat for their brain. They need fat for their brain. And then like once they're turned two, they're like, no, go to skim. And someone told me that they're saying like go to 1 or 2% now. But you're like, so you need whole milk. And then all of a sudden your brain says, we don't need all this fat anymore, like this good, awesome fat. And so the other aspect too is that we'll do organic. You know, and some people think that organic's a scam, and I would choose to disagree. There might still be some of not the best things, but they're not going to be at the volume. And so that's what we look for. Now, albeit, again, it takes us a little bit of time to go through that milk. But those are more specifically. Now, if you can get it from a local farmer, I think that's wonderful. There's a lot of questions about pasteurization. Weston A. Price has tons of information about raw milk and consumption of raw milk and the benefit, and why so many people that have problems with dairy are looking at more of the pasteurized versions of those. And so if you can go through that, I think that's wonderful. Now, that being said, there's a little bit more about milk that we're going to continue to keep talking about, tips, tricks, and what to look for, and we'll talk more next.
You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com. You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. Hear full shows on the podcast link at freedom95.us. Here's Dr. Leanne.
I was down, but now I'm up, up.
Welcome back. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic. 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today we're talking about milk. The good, the bad, the ugly, the real, the non-dairy alternatives. It's been interesting because, you know, I used to only consume non-dairy milk, just dairy in general. You know, and then I, more honestly than not, I just started looking at the ingredients and just was like, oh, wow, there is quite a bit of extra crud that's in these non-dairy milk alternatives. And so I want to run through a couple of them while you're here. One of them that I want you to look for is carrageenan. It's an additive, which is extremely inflammatory. Carrageenan is so awful to the digestive tract that researchers use it to induce colitis in laboratory animals. And the World Health Organization actually classified one type of carrageenan as a possible human carcinogen, carcinogen being that it causes cancer. And so although it might say, like almond milk might say organic or heart healthy, doesn't necessarily mean it should be part of your diet. The other thing too that's kind of interesting is that if you soak your nuts before you blend them, it just makes them more viable, or even can consume them at all. But it's just one that you've got to be careful with, like phytic acid and enzyme inhibitors. You know, they're not an additive, but it's an anti-nutrient. Another one too that you'll see is like natural flavorings, which, you know, kind of is a gray area. Sometimes natural flavoring is the FDA is forcing you to put like vanilla because it's like a vanilla extract. They consider it a flavor, but a lot of the times it's crap in there too. So that's the problem with that natural flavors. The other one is vegetable oil. Like, and I kind of talked a little bit about this, the Oatly, which I thought was really interesting. Canola oil, corn oil, safflower oil, rapeseed oil, sunflower seed oil, soybean oil, all bad news. You know, it's we can't figure out why it's so inflammatory. And so, you know, you're like, hey, in a good, better, best scenario, what's the least inflammatory? And I'm like, I don't eat those oils. I actively work on not eating those oils, but yet you're going to consume it with this nut alternative. Soy is another one. Soy milk's like one of the worst choices by far. Soy contains high amounts of phytoestrogen, so it can cause estrogen dominance. You'll see that a lot with, you know, I have seen a handful of men who come in who only drink soy milk because they think it's healthier, but they will have gynecomastia, which is female breast tissue. Well, it's breast tissue in men, but it shouldn't be in there. The thyroid also impairs, or soy also impairs thyroid function, which lowers metabolism. So, you know, you talk about like thinning hair or skin problems or weight gain. Soy also contains substances that can interfere with protein digestion. So you'll oftentimes it can cause serious pancreatic problems. And also soy is super high in mineral blocking phytic acid. You will also see through all of this, you're like, oh, by the way, here are a ton of vitamins added back in so that when you glance at that label, it seems very healthy. And so you'll see D2 that's added, which offers absolutely no benefit to the body and may actually be harmful. But then you'll see all like the B vitamins. But just because a rice milk claims to have as much calcium as regular milk, it doesn't mean that the body absorbs it and utilizes calcium from both items the same way. And so Like real whole milk provides adequate saturated fats to help the body utilize calcium and fat-soluble vitamins in the milk, where non-dairy milk offers no natural cofactors that allow for assimilation of vitamins, right? And so, again, a lot of non-dairy milks contain synthetic vitamin A. So while naturally occurring vitamin A, you're not going to create a toxicity, even in higher doses. Moderate doses of synthetic vitamin A can cause toxicity. And so you've got all of these different things that you're looking and you're like, almond milk, it's filtered water and almonds, but it also has natural flavors. And this is like silk unsweetened vanilla almond milk. You look at natural flavors, locust bean gum, sunflower lecithin, gel and gum, calcium carbonate, vitamin E, vitamin D2. And you look and you're like, oh, just so many vitamins. And you're like, it's not natural. Again, rice dream, unsweetened rice milk. There's an organic rice base, which is water and rice. That's how it's made. But then you see organic tapioca starch, organic expeller pressed canola and or safflower oil and or sunflower oil, tricalcium phosphate, carrageenan, natural flavorings, all the added xanthan gum. And so when I was like, goodness, the more I look at this, the more I'm like, it's not how I'd make it at home. But also I'm not going to make it at home. So it's just one of those, like, I'm in a place in life that we just, again, we don't eat it enough or fast enough. It's not a value of me. I'd rather have no milk than that nut alternative. So that's where we kind of transitioned a little bit over more to the A2 organic whole milk. That's what we choose. You know, and in a good, better, best scenario, it's like we're not 100% dairy free. But even so, I was sharing that the kids will usually do some sort of like healthy protein in their lunches. And the kids are like, let's switch it up a little bit. I said, great. So there is raw goat milk cheese. It looks like Munster cheese. And so we did some slices of that. I did a mini, it's probably like 3 or 4 ounces. It was a yogurt. What was great about that is that this yogurt's only sweetened with stevia. Most of the time it's either very high in sugar or it's got a lot of those synthetic sweeteners that are in there that I'm not going to allow my kids to have. But so it's just stevia and it's 10 grams of protein. So I'm like, they can very easily get 15, 20 grams of protein in that meal. Their sides were cucumbers, apples. My oldest son chose a Lara bar and then my middle son chose seaweed, which he's just like not a sweet kid. Like he would prefer fruit over a chocolate chip cookie any day. And he's always been like that. And it's very intriguing to me. But yeah, what he wanted for his special snack, he wanted some seaweed bites. I was like, sure. You know, and again, maybe not the most great oil that's in there, but you know, it's really great for iodine. And you know, it's all a good, better, best. I think those are ones where, and again, the non-dairy, I think it's like Forager sour cream. I look at the ingredients and I'm like, you know, for sour cream, for example, it's hard to find organic sour cream, but there are sour creams that it's how you would make soured cream, right? So there's only 3 ingredients versus this laundry list. So, you know, I think when you're looking at a good, better, best scenario, we do pretty minimal. And when we do it, I'm always going to look for the most whole, the most organic, and the least amount of ingredients in there. Like I want it closest to the source as possible. And so that's kind of my new changed thought process on milk. And that is truly why, you know, thoughts and times start to change, and we do the same for what we do. So we're just doing clean, healthy milk with one ingredient, which is milk from cows that are not forced genetically changed dairy cows that produce more A1. They produce A2. So just all, if you don't know about A1 and A2, it's something very intriguing. If you feel like you have a dairy sensitivity, that's something that you might want to look into. So thanks for tuning in. I always appreciate your time. Look forward to next week, but always remember that your power is on.